Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our special guest, Saul Kaplan, the founder and head of the Business Innovation Factory in Providence. He's also a former director of the State Economic Development Corporation. Thanks for coming in, Saul.
Good morning. Great to be with you guys.
More board members are leaving the State Economic Development Corporation, and a lack of leadership continues to mark the EDC. Scott, what do you say? Is it time to blow up the EDC and start over?
You know, it seems like there's a proposal to change the EDC about every 12 minutes in this state, and I'm not sure that blowing it up per se is the way to go. I actually think we should probably defer that to our friend Mr. Kaplan here and see what he has to say.
Well, I prefer the word reset to blowing it up. But let me be clear about it. Reset is definitely necessary here, and we've waited way too long, you know, to do this. It's not about the structure, although with the board members leaving, you know, Cheryl Sneed and Jack Templin, you know, everybody who knows these two individuals know, you know, that these are exactly the kind of people, you know, we need in the civic conversation about how to strengthen our economy. You know, what a shame, you know, to lose them, you know, from this platform. We should hit the reset button. You know, we should restructure the organization, and we should move on to set a clear and compelling economic development strategy.
Saul, what did you think of the recommendations put forward by the Rhode Island Public Expenditure Council? Governor Chafee asked for those and then ignored pretty much most of them.
I thought a lot of it was really good, and I think that we should pay serious attention to it. I like the idea of somebody in state government, you know, that's running a commerce department, you know, that is accountable to the governor and the General Assembly. You know, in some respects, that's what the EDC head always was, but was never really positioned that way. You know, let's get that positioning right. You know, recasting, you know, some kind of Commerce Corporation, you know, just seems like a new kimono, you know, to what the EDC is today. To me, it's more important to get on with declaring what kind of economy we want and aligning our activities to get there. You know, I think we've wasted this crisis, right? It's during the downturn that we should be making these moves so that we're better positioned to both come out after the downturn and be better positioned to weather the storm of the next one.
Maureen, what's your prescription for fixing the EDC?
Well, one of the things is I think we have to bear in mind that it's going to become, unless we restructure and put this under a commerce department per se, I would think it would be very difficult to get people to serve. I mean, this is not only a thankless job. I mean, it's one where you're up with a lot of criticism. And I mean, I think everybody has flown the coop because of the kind of criticism that everybody on the committee had. And I really think that we have to rethink what we say and what we expect of these people and how we treat them if we're going to expect talented people to, at this point, volunteer their time and give us some suggestions about what we're supposed to do about economic development. That's why I think maybe the idea of shifting it to a government position, at least at some point, it's some part of the structure, makes a lot of sense.
You know, what's interesting is how much of this, is just a hangover from the Curt Schilling 38 Studios thing. These people got put on the griddle and fried after this thing didn't work out.
Efforts to make Rhode Island's gun laws more stringent have faced an uphill battle at the General Assembly for many years. Maureen, do you think it'll be any different this year in the aftermath of the massacre last year at Newtown, Connecticut?
You know, this is interesting. It shouldn't be, but I think it's going to be because I don't quite understand the alliances up there now. There's a bill that's been proposed that talks about background checks. That's okay. But then they're saying you have to register your gun, pay a $100 fee, and have fingerprints. It's like a poison pill. I mean, I think it's an excessive and ill-advised way to deal with this problem. We could take smaller steps that make more sense in terms of background checks and accountability. But the idea of fingerprinting is it's never going to go.
Scott, is the lack of appetite on the General Assembly for more stringent gun laws a reflection of an honest philosophical disagreement or the fact that the NRA makes some fairly significant contributions to lawmakers?
They do about 110,000 or 120,000 over the last 10 years. But it's more than that. They also, it's a funny issue because I think if you poll it or talk to people, you will find widespread agreement for a lot of sensible gun laws. However, there's a very strong minority on the other side. that has a lot of passion. They're almost single-issue people, these rod-and-gun people, these gun folks. And I think there's a lot of passion on one side. I've always wished there was, on the gun control side, something like Mothers Against Drunk Driving that would be a grassroots-type effort, because I think that's what's needed. And here now, the Second Amendment folks, again, have hired former Speaker Bill Murphy as a lobbyist. He certainly knows his way around the State House. And it seems to me that they're putting in an awful lot of energy into stopping what seems to most people, getting rid of assault weapons, fairly sensible regulations.
Now, this is an unusual topic for you, Saul, but what's your perspective on this?
But not that I don't have an opinion, and it does link to our economy. If we don't have safe communities, you know, how are we going to have a stronger economy? You know, I'm personally in favor of as strict a set of gun laws and constraints on guns in people's homes and on the streets as we can possibly have. I'm glad we're having that discussion at the local level. It reflects what's going on nationally. You know, I can't read the tea leaves on what will or won't come out of the General Assembly. But one other point I would make, beyond just what happens in the General Assembly. I mean, we should be supporting what's going on in communities. I'm a big fan of the work Tenney Gross does. I'm sure you're all aware of that at the Institute for Nonviolence. I mean, he just recently lost some funding and had to lay some people off. It seems to me we should be investing more in grassroots community efforts to get at the kind of gang behaviors that also results in a lot of the gun crime that we see here.
Let's stay with Saul here. Woonsocket is the latest Rhode Island community to ask for concessions from its municipal retirees. What's your perspective on what can be done to help these old industrial communities come into the modern economic age and have a stronger local economy?
Yeah, we've got a lot more work to do here. The cost structure, both at the state level and at the local community level, is still way out of line with where it should be. So there's going to be more pain that's going to be felt at both the state and the community level. I'm a big fan of thoughtful consolidation across communities, cities and towns, each with administration, each with the cost structure in place, particularly support for employees and retirees. It's just not sustainable. We're going to have to change that.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of long-term, consolidation is way out there. More immediately, what these people have to face is they're going to either have to make some concessions or there is the threat of bankruptcy. And it's not out of the picture that they won't go down that road. In other words, they have to realize that it happened in Central Fall. Woonsocket's another case that's, very similar. And either these people make the concessions or, we pull the plug. And if they go into bankruptcy, that's how you readjust the cost structure.
The Woonsocket City Council President, John Ward, says he hopes that Providence lingers as the best case example for retirees in Woonsocket and Central Falls is the worst case. How do you see this panning out, Scott?
You know, Woonsocket seems to me like a city stuck in about 1957. And one of the problems there is they just have never found an economic engine to replace the textile industry. And first it moved down south into the third world. And the problem is the city of Woonsocket just doesn't seem to have the resources to meet their obligations. So I think in a best-case scenario, and Mr. Ward's a very sharp guy. We've had him in. He's a financial person who understands what's going on. If he could pull off something like Angel Taveras, the mayor of Providence, has done, and at least get some short-term fixes, maybe you could see the light at the end of the Woonsocket Tunnel.
Very quickly, I'd like to come back to the macroeconomic issue and go around the panel. A business guru from the Brookings Institution, Bruce Katz, spoke in Providence this week at the invitation of State Treasurer Gina Raimondo. Katz says that he boiled down his recommendations for Rhode Island by saying the state needs to set specific goals and aggressively pursue them. Sounds pretty simple. Why has Rhode Island struggled so much with that, Saul?
Yeah, if only it were that easy. Just set simple recommendations in place. He also said while he was here, that we have to stop waiting for someone else to fix this problem. I think a lot of us in the community, we keep waiting for institutional leaders to fix it, whether it's in government or some of our other larger institutions. I really believe it's time, for us to play a more active role as citizens here in Rhode Island. I mean, we can fix this. We can self-organize, to make progress and put pressure on the institutions to move.
It's a long-term problem, and I think that as long as Rhode Island continues to lag behind its neighbors in the educational and skill level of its workforce, we're going to be the laggard in New England.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thank you for joining us on Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And Saul Kaplan from the Business Innovation Factory.
Thanks a lot.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog and redesigned website at ripr.org.